Kevin Adams, welcome to Fresh Black Coffee. That's what we call our program on Saturday mornings. We got to speak a little bit beforehand, and I was really impressed. Why don't you give us just a little short background on yourself? You're a veteran. You were a Navy veteran, and you were discharged under medical reasons and so forth. And so why don't you just give us a little bit of background so people get to know who you are?
I'm Christian. I'm married. I've been married for a long time, almost 20 years. We have three daughters, 19, 17, and 6. We live in Rogers County, actually Verdigris. But I've lived in and around Tulsa my whole life, except for the time that I was in the military. My father worked in a steel mill. One of my grandfathers was a sharecropper. The other one was a diesel mechanic. So I grew up around average people. Our kids go to public schools. Didn't want them going to private schools. And
it's directional, so I want to catch your voice. Go ahead.
Okay, and I'm probably being kind of quiet. I can get loud, though. I'll probably get loud later. You know? Served in the military, got medically retired. The VA paid for my school. Went to junior college at TJC. It was TCC when I graduated. Mm-hmm. They paid for TU undergrad, and I'm still paying for the law school. You know, I haven't paid my student loans off quite yet.
Wow. So the VA didn't cover your...
Yeah, they wouldn't cover the grad school part of it.
That's the pricey part.
Yeah, I'm the first one in my family to go to college. You know, much less any type of law school.
Sure.
I didn't grow up around these types of people. And
you're a blue collar lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I first got sworn in at the Capitol.
Sure.
And how proud I was to be a member of such an honorable profession.
The bar.
Yeah, and it's been a real disappointment to me over the years to figure out it's not so honorable, you know. The criminal justice system, I've just been surprised and disappointed. You know?
Now, there are some judges. In fact, you and I met a few years ago when Judge James Caputo was up for basically a retention vote.
Yeah.
And you came and spoke to a Republican group on his behalf.
I did. I don't know that I would give the same speech today as I did back then. But, you know, sometimes I disagree with myself.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it takes a while before I disagree with myself. Sometimes almost immediately after I say it, I disagree with myself.
So. Dave has done that.
Yeah.
one prominent thing we won't talk about.
I resemble that.
Yeah.
So. But not me.
So, but yeah, I mean... You know, when I first started practicing law, I was real hard on myself. And I was like, Kevin, you have to become more persuasive so you can convince these judges that some, not all, but some of these cops are lying.
Yeah.
After a while, I figured it out.
Really?
The judges know the cops are lying.
Oh.
What I have to persuade them to do is to actually care about it. And that's a lot more difficult to do, especially in state court when there's a lot of political pressure. Now, the federal judge is a different story. Okay, you go across the street to the federal judges, they're still irritated about the police corruption scandal that happened 8-10 years ago, or maybe more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I think they were quite annoyed that those officers, that some of those officers had lied to them repeatedly.
Yeah.
I think it really reverberated over there. But, there was a judge out of Okmulgee, Ken Adair, who called down Tom Giuliani, the former DA's son, and issued a ruling. He was a police officer, issued a ruling that he was not trustworthy, didn't believe him. I don't know exactly the wording of the ruling. The state appealed to the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals that affirmed it, and they ran him out of town. Wow. You know, and he's not a judge anymore.
Well, let me ask you this.
The town ran the judge out because he had a ruling against the police officer.
Yeah.
Wow.
The police are... powerful political force.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. Are you suicidal?
No.
Okay. The reason I have to say that, you're taking on...
Juicy Smollett?
Yeah. Well, you're taking on some powerful people, and I think we need to wade into the case of what brought you here this morning.
Yeah. If somebody were to find me dead, it was not a suicide. Okay. I would just like to say that on the record, you know, so everybody knows I'm not considering suicide.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the reason I wanted you here, so that we have a record of what you have to say in case... somebody's not there to advocate for the case you're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would like to say that this will probably be the most controversial podcast that we have ever had.
Yeah.
And people really need to take note of this, because it's funny, this, some of the things we're going to get into, it won't be the specific cases, or mm-hmm. but things that I had been talking about on the Pat Campbell Show years ago. It's mm-hmm. been back in 2014, 13 through 16, 17, sure. 18, are things that I'd been saying.
Yep.
And I was accused of being anti-law enforcement, which is far from the truth. Mm-hmm. Because, and I want to say this too about you, Kevin, because I know you, having been a veteran, and thank you for your service. I know you're a patriot. You love this nation. You love the men in blue. But until we clean out the corruption, we cannot honor. What did you say? Defend and to protect and to serve is what used to be painted on a lot of the mm-hmm. cars, you know. And I always came up with the saying that it's more about to protect and get paid than to protect and to serve is what it kind of morphed into, which mm-hmm. was sad.
Yep.
And there are many cases. But I don't want to take up any more of your time, Kevin. So you had mentioned several cases and incidences that you believe are very important for us to know about. So why don't you, I'm going to turn this over to you and let you just tell us, plead your case.
Well, the first thing that I have learned recently, I've heard rumors of it for years, is that the judge's retirement system is funded off of the court fund. Okay, so when a judge assigns fines, a fees, a cost, or when a judge incarcerates somebody for not paying their fines, fees, and costs, that affects your judicial retirement fund.
Oh.
And you mentioned the Caputo issue.
Yeah.
I'm digging into this because of the challenging the pay structure on the conflict death penalty cases on this yeah. David Ware case, which is only $20,000 for first chair and $5,000 for second chair. I'm literally making less
chair attorney.
Yeah, per attorney for the whole case.
Counsel, yes.
And it hasn't raised since 1991.
Oh, geez.
It's not a fair system, and they don't want it to be fair. And I think it's unconstitutional. But in challenging the unconstitutionality of it, what you're running into is that if the judges required them to pay what they should be paying, it would take millions of dollars out of the court fund, which supports their retirement.
Okay, so let me back up here a little bit. The David Ware case. Now, you're brought in on that. What is the David Ware case?
David Ware shot and killed Craig Johnson.
A police officer.
Police officer. And Officer
Zarkazian.
Zarkazian. I have difficulty pronouncing his name. And on June the 29th of 2020. Mm-hmm. And it's set to go to trial here on April the 4th. We're supposed to start the jury selection. But the problem is they only pay $20,000 for church chair and $5,000 for second.
Okay. Now, is this for the defense or the process?
For the defense.
Okay, let me back up. Now, that's talking about public defenders. I didn't think you were a public defender.
I'm a conflict public defender on this case.
What is a conflict?
So when there's a conflict between the public defender's office or the Oklahoma Engine Defense System that's supposed to cover a particular mm-hmm. area, then they'll get a private attorney to step in and defend the case.
So one of the victims here, if you will, what, and you'll probably argue how much of a victim he is, has a conflict with the public defender's office.
Well, what had happened is, and they didn't put this in the record until I put it in the record, and mm-hmm. Mr. Coonswater's upset that I actually had the audacity to say it. But he probably ought to get used to that. But the thing is Sergeant Johnson and his wife were estranged, okay? Yeah. And he was living with a young public defender.
Oh,
and
yes.
Apparently he was drinking so much alcohol with the other public defenders that they felt like it was a conflict for their office to represent the man that killed him.
Yeah.
And the issue was that it's also a conflict, by the way, to represent people that he had arrested if you had that close of a relationship with him, but nobody ever raised that as a conflict.
Wow.
But I digress. So she had posted pictures and stuff on Facebook with him, and him and his wife were separated, and they'd filed for divorce. And my understanding is they're about to sign the divorce papers. But then when this case happened, the local law enforcement, they start presenting this image out there like he's this family man, which I
loving husband.
He got a divorce. People get divorced, right?
Is living with another woman.
Yeah, they did not tell people when they were raising over $500,000 for the family.
Yeah.
And to my understanding is the girlfriend got nothing. Okay. Wow. That, you know, I mean,
she's the one suffering the loss.
Well,
and the kids.
Yeah. And the kids too, you know, but
okay.
And so that's the issue.
Now that's how you got in the case. Good.
Yeah. Judge Mussman, who's now at the Court of Criminal Appeals, he called me up. Mm-hmm. And asked me if I would be willing to take an appointment to represent David Ware in this case. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, well, Judge, let me go talk to him and see if he's somebody I think I could get excited about
the
representing.
Defendant.
Yeah, let me go talk to David. Or, you know, David Ware at the time. And I went down there and talked to him. And, you know, I liked the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like the guy, and everything he's told me has been the truth. Mm-hmm. And what was going on at the time is that the chief of police, while standing next to Mr. Kunzweiler and the mayor of this city, got up there and started lying.
At the funeral, right?
No, not at the funeral, at the press conference the first day. And they told people that David Ware walked over and stood over Sergeant Johnson three times and fired three shots like coup de grace killed him and then turned and slowly walked away. And that's a lie.
Execution style.
Yeah, it's a total lie. Mm-hmm. They did not tell people that Sergeant Johnson was kicking him like he was kicking in the front door. And when you look at the pictures of it, you can see how he's holding onto the door of David Ware's car to get that little extra impact. They don't teach you to beat people up like that in the police academy. You got to learn that on your own out
kicking
on the street.
Kicking them where?
In the groin. In the nether region.
My goodness.
And maced him, tased him, kicked him twice. David Ware's pleading with him, please stop. Mm-hmm. Why are you guys doing this to me? Somebody help. And he's trying to get his friend to record it. And it wasn't the first time David Ware had been beat up by the police. Mm. And we got booking photos to show it. And at one time, David Ware went to get out of the vehicle. And Sergeant Johnson and Sarkisian are yelling, get on the effing ground. He wasn't saying effing, but get on the effing ground. And this was like a month after George Floyd.
Yeah.
And David Ware's like, ooh, and he sat back down in the car. Mm-hmm. And then Sergeant Johnson tells Sarkisian to turn off his body camera.
Oh, my God.
And Sarkisian turns, you can see on the video, and he actually muted it instead of turning it off. Rookie mistake. You know, because Sarkisian was a rookie. And that's when David Ware went for the gun.
Okay.
And he had been maced multiple times. In fact, he got maced about 5 or 10 seconds before he shot them. He couldn't see where he was shooting. His eyes are burning. He's just like this. And, you know, he defended himself.
Okay. And was David Ware under arrest at that moment?
They never told him he was under arrest.
Never told him he's under arrest.
Never.
What were they doing with it? Is he being detained? No.
He was, well, I mean, they wouldn't let him leave. It was clear from that because they'd tased him twice and maced him.
Right.
And what happened is Sarkisian was coming down 21st Street, a little past Sutherland's there, about between Mingo and Memorial.
Sure.
And David Ware pulls out. Pulls out and he goes to the opposite lane, and the traffic light is like a block away or block and a half away. So Sarkisian gets mad and he lights him up, and he's listening to like this headbanger, a puppet master or something music. And you gotta listen to the lyrics of it.
Who's playing the music?
Sarkisian.
Okay.
In his cop car.
The rookie cop
is listening to hardbanger
rap.
And he's got listed on his Facebook page, by the way, his occupation as waste management.
Oh, my God.
Because some officers will say that they're garbage collectors. You know,
to serve and protect, but he's turned it into waste management.
Yeah, well, there's a certain segment of a garbage class, you know, that they don't feel like deserve the same constitutional protections as the rest of us, you know.
That's your assertion.
That's my assertion, and his assertion that he's in waste management, you know. Yeah. But anyway, so what happens is he pulls him over. David Ware doesn't have can't find his license because David Ware just hit the jackpot at Hard Rock, and when you do that, they come and they take your number. And I got the footage and everything.
Let me back up. Had David Ware gone through that traffic light?
No. Sergeant Johnson was lied to by Officer Zarkazian. He tells him, and it's all on video, that he ran the light. Got the video, and he had not run the light. And in fact, the latest motion that I filed laying out our theory of defense, I explain all this. So I put screenshots in there and everything. So that, our judge can understand what the defense is, and so there's no confusion during the trial when the trial runs smoothly.
Okay, so the motivation for the stop was a lie.
It was a lie. Yeah, okay. The justification was a lie.
Okay.
David Ware didn't have his license, which is interesting. They eventually recovered it from the Hard Rock, but, amazingly, two officers in two reports both claimed that they arrived at the scene, looked at the wallet, and saw David Ware's license in there. Uh-oh. Isn't that funny that two Tulsa police officers, two separate Tulsa police officers, one claims he found it on the outside of the car in the wallet, one claims he found it on the inside of the car in the wallet. Both of them said they saw the license. I got the reports. I signed it in my motion and my latest filing, but actually they recovered that at the Hard Rock Cafe. Hard Rock Casino. Okay, just total lies.
More lies, yeah.
Zarkazian lied about him not having insurance, okay?
Mm.
And he did have insurance. In fact, they recovered the insurance verification in the car, but you can also run the insurance verification off the VIN number.
Sure you can.
And I've got a screenshot where he ran it. Plus, he handed him a receipt that he had from the insurance agency. And I just sent my investigator over there with a subpoena, and they gave us a copy of the valid, the proof. And I stopped him with a screenshot that, and attached it to my last motion where it said, 9751 times 3 months. Well, he got the insurance when he got the car. And it had been 2 months before. So, you would have known that he'd paid and it'd still be there.
Six months or so, yeah. Let me just ask, typically when a cop stops you, not that I would know any of this, but they ask for your license, registration, insurance, then they go back to their squad car and they run the numbers, right?
Yes.
So then when they come back to you, which I assume this kind of thing happened with David Ware, they probably already knew his car was under, it was insurance was in effect if they were able to run the VIN number.
I believe that Zarkazian knew, and the state has not turned over to me yet the information of what was on Zarkazian's computer.
It's been almost 2 years.
Well, apparently if they found this information in the car, they never asked for it. That's the only thing
whether or not Zarkazian ran the number.
Yeah.
The insurance number or the tag number?
Well, there wasn't a tag because it was a paper tag. Okay. He'd bought the car, and so when he saw the title that Ware had not transferred over yet, and he says, "Does that have the VIN number on it?" Yeah, he goes, "Give me that too." Okay. And then I got the screenshot from his body camera where he ran it on the computer. You can see him holding it right there and on the computer. And also, Ware gave him a piece of paper from the insurance company, but he didn't have the right date on it, okay? And he couldn't find the actual verification, which they did find when they processed a car. It was actually in there.
All right. Kunzweiler, our district attorney, has had 21 months to give you the report of what did Zarkazian run on the computer system, and he still hasn't, and you're bound over for trial.
Well, I filed a motion to compel. It probably would have got there earlier if I'd have, if I'd have pushed it sooner. I'd subpoenaed the Oklahoma law, they call OLETs, and they basically sent me somewhere else. But I'd also issued a subpoena to the sheriff's department, and the district attorney's office filed a motion to quash, claiming that I shouldn't be issuing third-party subpoenas. So I thought about it. I said, you know what? They can get it for me. You guys don't want me issuing third-party subpoenas? I got the Sixth Amendment right.
It's state's evidence.
Yeah, and the state's, so give it to me. That hasn't been ruled on yet, but I can prove it whether they give it to me or not.
Yeah, but, David Kunzweiler, same, you swear an oath.
David Ware.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Don't disparage my client like that.
Kunzweiler, sorry. Kunzweiler pledged an oath when he entered office to protect the Constitution, to honor the Constitution, which includes a right to a fair and speedy trial. But if you're withholding evidence, you are dragging your feet trying to prevent a faster, speedier trial.
I go with you there, but honestly,
it's small potatoes.
I don't know if that's a fair criticism, and there's so many fair criticisms of Mr. Coonswater, I wouldn't want to engage in an unfair one.
Well, I say that because on your website yesterday morning, you posted the entire defense argument for him. You put it out there. That's not done.
No, I've never done it. But the thing is look, I'm not, there's no trick plays here. I'm coming straight up the middle.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm arguing, and this is the truth, and I'm going to tell the truth, and I'm coming straight for them. And it's my understanding, I filed a motion not to politicize the death penalty, which Steve Coonswater has a history of doing. And
why would he do that?
To get reelected.
Oh, is the election coming up?
Yeah, it's an election.
That's they're right. Have filings to, in 3 weeks.
They're going to have to stop the trial. So that Mr. Coonswater, and I think probably Mr. Gray, I hear he might be running for judge, can go to Oklahoma City to the state capitol to register for re-election, okay? And I think it's politicizing the death penalty. I ask them not to do it. They're going to do it anyway. I don't know that we need to be trying a case during that time period, but they're denying it. But it's my understanding that Mr. Coonswater's been out with some of the grassroots people. And he's been talking about this case and been talking about me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to respond.
So what are you pleading in this case for your client?
Self-defense. Okay. Justifiable homicide.
Then let's go. They wanted to take his car, impound it.
Yes.
Did they have a legal right to demand it?
I don't believe that they had a legal right at all.
Based on what?
Because he hadn't done anything wrong.
Okay.
I mean, he had insurance. He had a license. His tag was 60 days in the middle of a COVID. Okay. But you can't tow after the Tulsa Police does not tow after 60 days. It's got to be 90 days past due before they tow.
I understand the statute says 90 days before they can impound a vehicle. Yeah. I talked to a police officer who said, no, if it's a paper tag, we can do it after 30 days, which that surprised me. But I can't find a statute to back that up. Yeah. That might be just an operational ruling within the cops.
Well, they rarely do it anyway. What they normally do is give you a ticket and add a fine for the late days.
Yeah.
Is all that normally happens. I've never seen them impound.
But Governor Stitt, now we are in the middle of COVID, the first wave, when it was the most deadly.
Yeah.
And what did Stitt do that impacts your case?
Well, and I want to be clear about this. That there was an emergency order issued, executive order issued, that my interpretation of it says that they didn't have to get the license and registration requirements from the Oklahoma Tax Commission. Okay. Now, I've heard somebody else say, no, they would have a different interpretation of that, and there hasn't been a legal response to it. But as an attorney, if it's an argument that could be made for my client, I'm going to put that argument in there. I'm going to make it, okay, especially when this government is trying to kill my client.
Yeah. An attorney friend of mine, Terry Simonson, said, the Constitution and the statutes say whatever a court determines, they say.
Yeah.
So we have yet to get a court determination on this matter.
But you know, the thing is what Eddie was saying is absolutely true. I've been pulled over on multiple occasions and have forgotten that my tag was expired.
Yeah.
And they always just write me a ticket or even say, hey, man, get your tag. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not a member of the garbage class.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's part of the problem. The problem is you can't have equal justice under law unless you're willing to treat people equally.
Okay? Based on no matter what vehicle they're driving, what they look like, and what kind of music they're listening to.
Yeah.
Shouldn't matter at all.
Well, it shouldn't matter. Now, the music, just be clear, that was Sarkeesian listening to
that. Yes.
It was. David Ware wasn't listening to that. David Ware was very happy, you know, very happy.
Right. There are prejudices in our society, probably always will be. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, that prejudice is class-based, not necessarily ethnicity-based.
Yeah. I've found that, and I'm not saying that race doesn't play a role.
Sometimes.
And, you know, I'm a white guy. It's kind of hard for me to say, you know. But I will say that a lot of it is class-based, and this is something that bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
Because I grew up poor.
Yeah. I've had cops tell me, honestly, if the hubcaps are missing off the car, that's a flag right there.
Yeah, I apologize. Someone decided to mow their lawn outside of our building
in early March.
By the way, let me interject. You make a good point because I've just written this book, and this book deals with this, that it's not about race, that it is about class.
Yeah.
And my wife, in fact, always says, I have black privilege. Mm-hmm. I found that I actually get away with, she always says, I get away with stuff because I'm black, where a white person may not get away with the same thing.
And you can say words I can't say.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Talk about things that you can't. So I definitely affirm what you're saying. It is true. A poor white kid, a poor white person, especially younger, will get away with things. A black person, I mean, will get away with things more quickly than a young white, long-haired or a kid in a raggedy car listening to certain music and things like that.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine that went and became an Oklahoma Highway Patrol trooper. I was friends with him at Tulsa Junior College, where I met him years ago, back in the 90s. And he went through their academy, and what those officers were taught down there when he went through was dirt bags drive dirt bag cars.
Yeah.
That's what they teach some of these officers. And to have somebody like Officer Sarkisian come straight out of the academy, and he's posting on his Facebook that he's waste management. Mm-hmm. What are we teaching our officers there at the academy? We should not be teaching them that. Some people are just poor.
Yeah.
You know, some people are just poor. It doesn't mean they're bad people. They're just poor. In fact, I'll go one further. Most poor people are better people than most rich people.
Thank you.
Rich people have been taking advantage of poor people since right before they were rich and poor people. That's how the rich people got rich to begin with, oftentimes.
Let's sum this up because the segment.
Yeah, because.
Wait, yeah, let me just. So to sum it up, essentially, your client did, allegedly, I won't go any further, but allegedly did do the shooting. He did shoot the officers.
Ain't no doubt he shot them both.
Okay, all right. So, but your contention is that to take a tort term, the proximate cause of this was the fact that he was not, I don't know about illegally, but let's put it this, unwarrantedly stopped in the first place.
Well, the stop, I believe the stop was unlawful from the beginning, but the shooting was not. Okay, he was legally justified. He has a right to self-defense.
Because they maced him and they were beating him.
Because, yeah, he has a right, he was in fear for his life of great bodily harm, and he was resisting a violent felony, specifically Title 18, United States Code, Section 242.
So, in sense, it was stand your ground, but he was standing his ground. It could actually come under stand your ground, right? But it was stand your ground against the police. I mean, the only difference was if I was beating him up, kicking him, and doing bodily harm to him, it would be justified under stand your ground.
Yeah.
But because it's the police, it comes into a whole other category.
Well, there's certain people in our society that act like that they are not, the law doesn't apply to them.
Right.
Right. He's in possession of a vehicle. And they were trying to basically carjack it, is your assertion. So after the break, I'd like to hear what actually transpired in the violent part of this.
Okay.
Stop. Yeah. We're going to take a break here. This is Eddie Huff, David Van Rissingham, and Kevin Adams. And you're watching and listening to Fresh Black Coffee.
That's a great name.
Thank you. All right, we're back, and our guest stepped out for a moment. He'll be back in just a bit. So we are back, as I said. And
what do you think of what you heard so far, Eddie?
Yeah, this is. I mean, it puts a whole new light on the case. It's funny how when you initially hear something and then you get a new look at it, it totally paints a different picture. And it'll be interesting. There are a few more. We're probably going to wrap this case up, but there are a few more issues that we want to bring up with Kevin here.
Yeah.
As I said, I think this will be the most controversial podcast that we have done yet, and we hope to do many more. Listen, you know, as I tell people, I'm too old to worry about what people think about me and us, and I think you're probably approaching that age.
I'm trying to wean myself off of that care.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is. You get to a point where, like I said, I don't really care what people think so much anymore, and we do want to just make sure we do what's right, and our country is in a mess, let's put it this way, mm-hmm. locally, nationally, and internationally. There are a lot of things that need straightening out, and this is one of the things. Things always start locally. Mm-hmm. It's your block, mm-hmm. your town, your state, your nation. And this is one of the things that Kevin... It's funny because for years on Pat Campbell's show when I was co-host there and on my podcast, on my blog, when Dave was helping me there, I've always just felt that something's not right, and I've always spoken out, as you know.
Yeah. Oh, when we covered the Muskogee wedding shooting that involved the police.
That young kid.
You were dead on about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's another one. That was years ago. Mm-hmm. The Crutcher thing where I was saying, you know, I felt that was, you know, overcharged and underprosecuted. Yep. I think Betty Shelby, especially then when she gets hired, she gets her full pension and she gets hired in Claremore. Are you kidding me?
She's making her time.
Yeah,
and half,
and then people wonder why Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
It comes around. I mean, that's why.
I can explain what the problem is from my point of view, just generally, if you want to hear it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and listen, Kevin is a Republican. Kevin's conservative. He's a Christian. He's a believer. He's not a lefty radical or anything, mm-hmm. but he wants to do what's right. And I'm getting goosebumps even talking about this. I mean, that's how crazy this is. Go ahead, Kevin.
Here's the problem. The problem is, and this first started occurring to me what the issue was when I watched the police corruption scandal, the first one. With Harold Wells and those guys, I watched about 70-80% of that trial.
About how far back was this?
2010. Okay, and the Henderson case, I got subpoenaed as a witness,
of the black officers back then, wasn't
no,
it?
No, this was Jeff Henderson and
Yates,
Yelton,
yeah,
who was acquitted.
Yes, Yelton was
acquitted, and Harold Wells went to federal prison and stuff. And I'll tell you, from what I've learned, I was pretty hard on Henderson at the time, but from what I've learned about some of these judges down there, I feel a little bad about it because while I still do believe he was guilty, was convicted of, and more, he's not as corrupt as some of these some of the other corruption going on there, but I'm digressing. But here's the point. Here's the problem. The problem is this. When you call somebody a bad guy, okay, that's a conspiracy. Okay, mm-hmm. What you're actually saying is he's good, and I mean he's bad, and I'm good.
Yeah.
And if he's bad and I'm good, then whatever I do to catch him is justifiable in your mind.
Exactly. Okay? And justifies the means.
Which, by the way, is the theme to every Hollywood cop movie that you ever saw.
Sure.
And so the worse your good guy is, the worse you have to make your bad guy in your mind, or it won't balance out.
Yes.
That's why the character of the bad guy in Dirty Harry is so crazily bad. You could take the Dirty Harry character and make him the bad guy if you put somebody on the other side of him as good. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is more insidious and it's more dark, okay? What they're doing is they're cutting ties with the external reference, which is the United States Constitution.
Bingo.
Okay?
Yes.
And they're becoming a reference in and of themselves, where they're protecting and serving, it becomes protecting the brotherhood, which is what law enforcement has become oftentimes, protecting each other, and you protect your brother even when they're wrong, okay? And the serving part of it is us serving them.
Okay? Yeah, you become tribalistic about it.
Yeah, versus them.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is the problem. We have to have an external reference.
Yeah.
Okay, and that reference. The brilliance of the United States Constitution is the separation of powers.
Yes.
Because the founding fathers knew that people have a tendency to become tyrannical, mm-hmm. which is the sin nature of man.
Yes.
Okay, and they were trying to create a constitution that separated the powers where one group could not completely take over.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But what happens is, and partly because of the local media, especially in places where you have bad media or you don't have good media to flush this out and shine the light in mm-hmm. there, what happens is when it comes to criminal cases, these people start beating their chests about, hey, I'm here to protect you. We're here to protect you. I hate to tell you, the people that talk the loudest about how they're here to protect you or they're oftentimes the people you need to protect you from the most.
Yes.
Okay. They're the real threat. Okay. Because they get you to let your guard down. And that's the problem. These people do not believe what they claim to believe, or they would not act the way it is that they do.
Okay.
I want to back up to something now that you bring this up. And that is this whole issue of Mr. Kunzweiler. He had talked about and run on all of the capital punishment cases he had run on, all the death penalty cases, and what he did after he got elected. You said he had run on the fact that he had prosecuted all of these death penalty cases and what he did. Could you explain that?
Okay, and I lay this out. I filed a motion not to politicize the death penalty. It's on my website. It's on the filings. Mm-hmm. It's filed public record. But Steve Kunzweiler,
where'd you file this motion?
It's filed in the public record in the Ware case, and it's on my website. It's mm-hmm. public record. And I used Tulsa World articles.
Yeah.
But Steve Kunzweiler filed the request for 6 death penalty requests before the last election in 2018 mm-hmm. over 5 separate cases. He campaigned on being tough on crime. He actually said at a campaign event that he's the only DA that's taken a death penalty case to trial. And then, after he got reelected, all of the requests for death penalties went away.
Oh, my
He wasted
goodness.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars of the taxpayers' money, but they can't. But I'm being paid less than a barista, okay, mm-hmm. to try to save a man's life, okay,
yeah.
and actually losing money when you figure overhead,
yeah.
which you know, people that have actually been out into the private sector understand overhead. People that work for the government their entire life do not. Mm. And I tried one of those cases, by the way, a lady by the name of Michaela Riddle, and I never spend any money getting expert witnesses and stuff, because as soon as I got involved in the case and looked at it, I knew that they weren't serious about pursuing the death penalty, and after the election, it went away, so the taxpayers didn't have to pay extra money they had to pay me $20,000, mm-hmm. but even my co-counsel didn't do hardly anything on it, so she waived her fee, so they didn't have to pay the $5,000 on that. But I tried it to a jury. The jury didn't even convict her of first-degree murder.
Okay.
They convicted her second degree, yeah. and it wasn't a death penalty case to begin with. Never should have been a death penalty case.
Except
there's an election coming, and it's despicable, okay? Mm-hmm. The death penalty is supposed to be reserved for the worst of the worst, and you should not play politics with the death penalty, and that is what our current district attorney is doing, and okay. he should be ashamed of himself.
So to be clear, you're not opposed to the death penalty. You just don't feel it should be used for political purposes.
I agree with that. Look, if I personally, when I tried my first death penalty case with Rob Nye, I don't know if you guys remember Rob Nye, defended Timothy McVeigh. And
yeah.
I told my wife after that, if somebody kills me, and I don't care how bad it is, I would never want the state to seek death on my behalf. Because when somebody gets a sentence of life without, once the appeal's over, it's over. Mm. But when somebody gets a death sentence, the family sits around and they hate and they wait and they hate and they wait and they hate and they wait. And then when it finally gets carried out, if it finally does, because we have about a 50% reversal rate on death sentences in Oklahoma. Mm. But when it finally gets carried out, the family's disappointed.
Okay.
And I tell my wife, I would not want to teach my children to hate and wait like that.
Right, but philosophically, yeah. You don't disagree.
But no, the government, if they want to kill people with the justice system, they can do that. Okay. But you got to be fair about it.
Yeah. You mentioned your website. Give us that website real quick.
It's OklahomaCriminalLaw.com.
OklahomaCriminalLaw.com.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to get into what happened that left a cop dead and another one fighting for his life.
Okay. Well, I mean, and like I said, I'm responding to things that Mr. Kunzweiler has been telling people at these grassroots meetings.
Yeah.
And what he's told the media and what the media hasn't told people. But I lay it out. The most complete record is if you look at that theory of defense, I lay it out and I cite it. I've never done that before.
Right.
But basically, look, David Ware was getting beaten by Sergeant Johnson, and he was kicked in the groin twice. One time it looked like he was kicking in a door. He was maced. He was tased. He knew that they were lying about, Sarkisian was lying about him not having insurance. He kept telling him, I do have insurance. I do have insurance. He knew he had insurance because he paid the money for it, right? He knew that he had a license. He kept saying, why don't you guys just write me a ticket? You know, just treat me like everybody else.
And this is all on the recording.
It's all on the recording. He's begging and pleading, somebody help, somebody help, please help. Why are you guys doing this to me? At one point, he's cowered down like this, and Johnson's standing over him with his mace. By the way, Johnson had deployed his taser 61 times since 2015. He had arced it, which you arc it to threaten somebody with it, 132 times, I think. In that same time period, okay, you're looking at almost 200 times. I don't know what the city of Tulsa paid for that taser, but they got their money's worth out of his taser.
Let me ask you this, because we found out in Georgia about a year ago when a man was able to take a taser from a cop and then use it against a cop, and then a fellow cop shot and killed the man, justified it because, at least in Georgia, a taser is determined to be a deadly weapon. Yeah. Is that the case in Oklahoma?
I don't know, but they tased Ware twice and he just pulled it out. He just pulled it out.
What I'm saying is, if David Ware had taken that taser and shot the cop with the taser, would the cop have been justified to kill him?
Okay. You're asking, that's two different questions, okay?
This is David.
I'll answer your questions both ways. Mm-hmm. Legally, I don't know what the ruling would be.
Yes.
In reality, you're dead bang on it, okay?
Yeah.
Because the truth is if you kill a police officer, at least this district attorney is going to try to kill you.
Yes.
Okay? Whether you're justified or not.
Yeah.
But if a cop kills you, they're not even going to charge him, okay?
That's what we found.
We have a two-tiered justice system.
More often than not, that's the case.
And the only reason he charged Betty Shelby is because he was scared of Al Sharpton, okay? Mm-hmm. Al Sharpton was coming to town. They boarded up the Quick Trip at 15th and Denver. They were calling people into the hospitals. And then he didn't even let the police department finish their investigation, and he rushed out and charged Betty Shelby.
He did rush. It was very fast.
Yeah.
Very fast.
As I was telling you earlier, and I said this on the radio way back, that I believe he overcharged and underprosecuted. And it was purely...
Deliberately both ways.
Right. He held off the riots and the demonstrations by charging her to the max. And then when it came trial time, he undercharged. Okay. And when I had him on the show with the Pat Campbell show, he basically said, did I do that? Really? You think? You know, I mean, it was like, basically he admitted that he did it, and it's just crazy. So I don't disagree with anything you have to say about our DA. It's, you know, I mean, I don't hate the man. I don't have anything personally against him. He's probably a good guy. I just, professionally, have some real issues there with that whole department. And sadly, I just don't think... the city has the gumption, and I don't know who, maybe you should be the DA. I don't know, you know, and no, I know. You're like me. When people say you should run for office. Yeah. No, I'm too busy running from office than to be running for office. So, but hey, Kevin, how about you had some more cases, some more issues that you wanted to, that you had mentioned to me earlier. Bring up a couple of more of those. We probably have another 15 minutes.
Okay. I want to touch base upon this. Look, in his first election, My family and I went out and put signs out for Steve Quinn's water.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm with you. I don't have anything against him personally, except that I don't think that he has the courage to do that job. And it takes, it would be, I mean, they ought to pay the DA twice as much as they pay a judge because it's half, because it's a worse job. Okay. Somebody's going to be upset no matter what you do. Okay. So I get that, but you got to have courage, the courage of your convictions. Okay. And if you truly believe something, that should put you in harm's way, not protect you from harm's way. And I agree with you. I think he over, he talked a good game on the Buddy Shelby case and then he took a dive. Okay. But it's also a problem with the lack of leadership in that office. And I don't know, I'm not in their little clique, but there have been multiple people have talked about how there's district attorneys down there are all sleeping with each other, or not all of them, but they're sleeping with each other. You have multiple affairs coming out of that office. There was one DA down there that was very close to him, that's very close to Kunzweiler, that was having an affair with another DA. And what I've heard from multiple people, it's been the punchline of multiple jokes at that courthouse, is that they got caught having relations in the stairwell by a sheriff and no charges were ever filed. Okay. If one of my clients got caught having relations in a public place, that would be indecent exposure. You'd lose your license over something like that. In the military, they call it fraternization. Okay. You've had multiple instances where district attorneys down there have had affairs with like victim witness people. That's a hot commodity down there, the victim witness people or the interns. You've got a couple, you got bosses having affairs with their underlings that they're supervising. And look, how can we have this group of people that are supposed to be passing moral judgments on other people engaging in this immoral activity themselves?
Okay, so I got to ask you in this, whether you agree with me or not. I believe an occupational hazard of the district attorney's office is you deal with many times the worst of our society. And I believe over time it gives you a tainted view of society. And I just think there ought to be term limits on the DA's office.
Perhaps. I go the other way. Yeah, look, when I first started practicing, then you had these old-time career prosecutors,
yeah.
Okay? I'd rather deal with an old career prosecutor than some young kid coming out of law school, because I remember how I was when I came out of law school, okay?
That's humility.
And I was like, yeah, let's go get them, you know? And it's easier to deal with an old gray-haired man, you know, that's been there for a while.
Wouldn't you agree there is a problem? Because I've seen it in district mm-hmm. attorneys mm-hmm. over time. I see them become bullies against the poor.
Well, here's the thing. Law school doesn't make a-holes. It attracts them, okay? It's a certain type of people that wants a certain type of person that oftentimes goes there. Not all of us, but, you know, I mean, 99% of lawyers make the rest of us look bad. And and so the thing is I'd say it this way. If you were a school teacher and you said, I have to go to the office, I'd like somebody to take names while I go to the office, okay? Mm-hmm. The kid that raises his hand may not be the one you want doing that job, okay? Okay? There may be something in that kid that he needs to fulfill, some itch he needs to scratch, okay? And it's the same with law enforcement, too. It's almost like you ought to have to say, you're a good guy, you're going to be a law enforcement officer. And don't get me wrong, I have law enforcement officer friends. I won't say their names because I wouldn't do that to them because I'm not a popular guy to be friends with in the law enforcement community.
Yeah.
There's just a judge down at the courthouse. When I walk in, he goes, there's the most unpopular man in the town.
Well, that's okay? why I asked you, are you suicidal? Because you're really taking on the beast here. Now, on the other hand, especially when it goes to this point of the governor's emergency order saying cops do not enforce. I already have a problem with cops being used as tax collectors because that's what happened with David Ware. Yeah. They were collecting a tax.
No, it's not.
Right, but that's not their job.
Let me tell you what happened with David Ware. What happened with David Ware is it was a training exercise. Sergeant Johnson was teaching the rookie how we treat people from this garbage class when they give us a hard time, when they give us lip. I've had two officers, I won't name their names, that did not know each other and I didn't I didn't cross-contaminate. I didn't tell one what the other one said. They watched a video for me, and I asked a question. Why did Sergeant Johnson not do something? And they both told me essentially the same thing.
Right, but he was under the guise of collecting the tax.
Yeah, but it was an excuse
to
do to him what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And what one officer said, he was just letting a dog chew on his bone, and the other one said he's just letting a puppy with his new chew toy, okay? Mm. He was teaching him how to what they did to people, contempt a cop. Okay, basically, it was a contempt a cop case, and they were beating on David Ware, and it got to the point that he's in fear for his life. He was in fear for his own safety, and this tragically happened as a result. But we have a right to defend ourselves against abusive government. If you don't believe that, look at the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. That's what it's there for, to protect us not from criminals, but from the government.
Yeah, and the people wrote it. Which
brings me to another side of this whole thing, and that's the media.
Yeah.
One of the big problems that we have in our country right now is a media that is quick to jump to one side. And they're always going to jump to whoever is the most popular side of an issue. Right now, I won't go to the national situation. We know what the popular side is there. But let's say locally, it's our local law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And they're going to take the side. So, for example, I mentioned you're coming into my wife and what we're going to be talking about. And she says, oh, yeah, I remember that case. And, you know, and I asked her. And, of course, she got it from the news. Sure. I got it. When you brought it up to me, oh, yeah, that guy who killed the cop and injured the other one, you know. And it just makes me, it wakes me up again. It kind of smack to tell, whoa, that's totally different from my impression that I got from the news. And here's a short version of everything, the Cliff Notes version of what I got. This guy was stopped for a traffic stop. He fled. They caught him. He gets out of his car and shoots two cops. One dies.
Standing
one
over
is seriously injured. Right. And they took got this big collection of money for these poor deceased.
For his wife.
Right. And all of this stuff. You know, these poor innocent officers in blue, you know, and my checks have, you know, support the blue, you know, my checks and all this. And so and now hearing this, it just, whoa, man, you know, how did I, but it's because everything we've heard on our news stations, on the radio, every time you turn around, it was a totally different story from what we're hearing now. Mm-hmm. How do we change that? Can we change that? Is that even possible? Who advocates for the other side? And now listen, I know there are bad people out there. You know there are bad people. You've probably had to defend bad people that you know, oh man, you know, I'm going to defend you, but you deserve anything you're going to get, right? Yeah. So, but we have still got to be to the point where the law is the law, justice is justice. We've talked about the Bill Cosby case. Mm-hmm. Bill, no, he's not the best moral person. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is not the most moral person on earth, right? Mm-hmm. But as Jerry Falwell used to say, he was not running for pastor.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He was running for president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby may have been an immoral person, but criminally, he still deserved the law to be the law, and the law was not handled properly in his case. So we have got to, and that's just a couple of examples.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Crutcher thing, you know, we could go on and on the way things were handled. So somehow we have got to get to the point where we're able to look beyond what we're being fed by the media, local and nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to, is there a way, is there a channel to be able to, like, how can we look at things more carefully? Is there a way?
Well, the first issue is, I think people have a low resolution view of it. And the way that they tell the story is, this is going, you know, the this defendant's going to benefit from this, you know, the system. That system is there to protect us all.
All of us.
Okay? Yep. And we might want to take care of it because we might need it someday, because it could be you that they come after one day. It could be your family member that come after one day. That old saying from World War II, you know, first they came for the communists, and I said nothing because I wasn't a communist, you know? Right, right. And by the time they came for me, there was nobody left to say anything. So we have to protect our children, not just for us. I mean, we have to protect our system, not just for us, but for our children and for our grandchildren, because this system of presumed innocent and these constitutional rights that's laid down is more important than any one particular case, okay? And our system was set up where I've heard some people say 100 guilty men should go free before an innocent man get convicted, or I've heard people say 10, but regardless, it should be skewed in the other way. But the Constitution is there to protect us from the government.
Yes.
But what happens is they try to make it sound like the problem. Politicians always want to consolidate power. Just give me the power and I'll fix it, okay? Yep. Even if you thought that politician would do the right thing, you still don't want to give them the power because you don't know what the next guy is going to do, and the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. And so, you know, I mean, it's just we have the separation of powers. We have to keep it separated that way.
See what you think is. Rush Limbaugh once said, and he's from a family of attorneys and judges, he said, his father once told him, our Constitution would rather see 10 guilty men go free than one innocent man get railroaded.
Yes, I mean, I 100% agree. That's what you have. That's the mentality that you have to have. Look, I've had people that I've represented on cases. I've had people I represent on murder cases that I knew they were guilty. And I knew that I was going to walk them out of the courtroom, and I knew that the government wasn't going to be allowed, wasn't going to be able to stop me because they weren't strong enough. They didn't have the evidence, okay? But I've also got clients that will die in prison that I think are innocent.
Yeah.
I mean, I've driven home sobbing and over cases of people that I still get emotional thinking about that I think are innocent and went to prison because of the whole situation, okay? We're very imperfect as people. Okay, and ultimately speaking, you'll have to leave pure justice to a higher power because we can't do it. You know, you talk about the politics. Everything we have comes from God. Okay, but just let me say this. All the isms, capitalism, socialism, fascism, all the isms, okay, communism, are just men fighting over the cut. I prefer to focus on the fact that it all comes from God and not how we divide it up.
It's funny, the late pastor Evie Hill, he had a saying, he says, all those isms ought to be wasms.
Yeah. I want to ask you, last thing, I know you got to go, Kevin, is what radio, TV, you know, newspaper in Oklahoma, who's let you have an opportunity to present your case like we have here at Fresh Black Coffee?
Nobody.
We're the first?
Well, I mean, I've done some with Channel 8, and I've done some with Tulsa World, but I think the police department and the district attorney's office are suppressing the truth about this case, as I know they frequently do. And there's been like a media blackout about anything that goes against their narrative.
Which narrative? How many times have you caught them in a falsehood?
Well, that narrative that basically this is a killer who in cold blood shot his officer.
Yeah. But that's how many times have you found inaccuracies in the police narrative? It's constantly changing.
I haven't kept track.
Yeah. Okay, you lost track.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The problem with this case will be, how many lies do I tell the jury about because I got more than I can possibly incorporate?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll just have to pick the best ones and go with those. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to come in today and sharing this with us. And we're going to make sure we get this out as much as we can. And I mean, it'll be all over our social media and our...
Yeah, and Eddie, you and I are not suicidal either.
I hope that the grassroots, and I've been part of the grassroots
in
the past. I was precinct chairman, delegate to the convention and all that. I hope the grassroots cleans up its own house when it comes to the election if Mr. Kunzweiler draws an opponent. Because we deserve a better district attorney. The people in this community deserve a better district attorney than that. And if they don't do it in the Republican primary with this community, you probably won't do it in the general.
Yeah, okay. We've got to, from the top down, or actually it needs to start from the bottom up.
Yep.
We have got to. Thank you once again, Kevin, very much. Okay. Yeah. Okay, we're back. Hey, man. I would have to say that was the, it has to be the most controversial and best segment we've done.
Welcome to election season.
Yeah, but even if this weren't election time, that was...
It was worth
having.
Yeah.
We need to have more of those because we've got to just essentially show what's really going on.
And, you know, in my point, that last question, when I said, Kevin, what other media has given you this opportunity, long form, to lay out your case?
Well, you didn't have any. In Tulsa, they're not going to do that because, you know, the police. Now, and I don't want people to get us wrong. We support the police.
Absolutely.
As I mentioned, my checks are you know, back the blue. I mean, I've got the police flag.
I support the role as essential to a peaceful society.
Right. No, I support law enforcement. I support the military. My son is in the Coast Guard, which essentially is law enforcement.
Yes, it is.
And and I know many, many good cops, great cops. Absolutely. In fact, I always, I think I told the story where I got stopped by the police in Owosso, legitimately for speeding, and I had been out to dinner, and I had a drink.
Remember that story? Yeah, I know. We had fun.
and he did everything.
Yeah,
by the book.
Yeah,
I had a firearm in my car.
Yes, you didn't even acknowledge. And you were going five over, right?
Yeah, five over. And the guy, you know, he said, "When were you going to tell me about this?" You know.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, he was firm. But he treated me with respect, dignity, and in the end, he said, "All right, sir, have a good evening," you know?
Yeah.
And so, sure, officer, and I commended him because he did his job. He did it professionally. He didn't have me on the ground. He didn't beat me. He didn't yell at me. He didn't cuss at me. He didn't treat me with lack of respect. He didn't treat me as special.
Yeah.
He treated me like you're supposed to as a police officer.
You know,
right?
If you are endangering public safety, he has a responsibility to maintain public safety.
Right.
But if he doesn't feel that you're in any way, I mean, he didn't consider, I think he did a field sobriety too, didn't he? Did he check?
Well, yeah, he had me walk this.
Yeah, that's field sobriety test. So he said, okay, he's not a danger by being inebriated.
Right. And I was speeding. And well, actually, the reason I was speeding, I don't know if I told this part, there was this car doing 15 miles an hour or 20 or something, and I got upset, and as I want to do at times when someone's going too slow, and I hit the gas and zoomed around them.
Sure.
You know, I'll show them, you know, I'm one of those deals. So I let my...
Yeah, but you told the officer you assumed it was 40. He said, "No, this is a Owosso."
No, I did. 30, yeah, I did.
35
in Tulsa, it would be 40 miles an hour.
Yeah,
on a major. Yeah,
and so once you know, he said, "No, it's 35
yeah,
here."
Yeah, understood.
And you accepted. You didn't argue it. You didn't complain about it. Right. So he thought, okay, now that he's informed, he'll probably go 35 like we want him to.
Yeah.
And because you're having to defer to their judgment of what's safe in their community,
and also. I remember, and I brought this up, there was the case of the lady. There was a lady, and I don't know why the police stopped her. But if you remember, she actually hit the gas and drove one of the officers against a wall. Do you remember this?
Yes.
She squeezed. I mean, could have killed him or paralyzed him.
I mean,
can you imagine being impaled against a wall? And the guy never shot her.
Yeah.
Never did. And the other, there were two of them. The other one jumped out of the way, and he managed to open the door and pull the lady out and stop the car. I have to admit, I probably would have blown her away.
She would have been reasonably justified.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
No, they didn't.
So it shows that there are officers that do the right thing. And I think Kevin would have, and I'm sure would agree, and he even did, that he knows there are officers that do their job and do it rightly. And yet, at the same time, until we get to the point where we really, truly honor the guys who do right and don't and deal with those who don't. And it's the same with DAs, prosecutors, judges. The difficulty in our nation today, though, here's the difficulty, people, in America right now, mm-hmm. is being able to discern who the good ones are mm-hmm. and who they aren't mm-hmm. and dealing with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have so many people running for office that once they get in, they turn on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know.
And Eddie, to your point, I'm going to, you know, toot my own horn on this, I know, is I don't just, you know, gripe and moan about police. I actually help train them. On mental health, I'm one of the people that gets called in, and not just for the field deputies who get all the training money, but the detention officers down at the county jail. They don't get hardly any training. I mean, Vic Regalado, our county sheriff, tries as best he can.
I think, speaking of good people, I think Vic is one
of the good ones. He's a solid guy. But I go around the state, and I'll run into sheriffs, you know, at different political events and stuff, because it is a elective office. Mm-hmm. And once they find out who I am, what I do, man, they'll pull me aside. I was down in McAllister last spring, and the sheriff there was serving as sergeant at arms at the county Republican convention. And I introduced myself, and he pulls me over, and we sat for like a half hour. And he was talking about some of the worst cases he's got in the jail of mentally deranged people. And one of them I knew, and I knew the family. And I had to start explaining to him, okay, here's why he's doing it. He says, oh, so he's not just being obstinate. I said, no, he's a desperate man. He's in delirious confusion, and he's just looking for some relief mentally. And, well, now, okay. Yeah. They don't. So helping them understand, and here's the other thing, helping them learn how to communicate with people who are mentally ill. Because communication is the key.
That's a tough one. And when we got rid of insane asylums,
mm-hmm.
that became a major problem.
It is.
You remember the case of the young kid, Williams, that died?
Elliot, sure.
In jail, yeah.
That's why I'm down at the jail, is because of Elliot Williams' death.
Okay, his father used to be a client of mine.
Yeah.
And his father called me many times asking me for help if I knew some people in county office, city office, state office, that could give him help. Because, I mean, we're talking years before Elliot ended up dying in jail. And because they didn't know what to do with him. And at that time, they couldn't do anything with him. Unless he was a criminal problem, and then he became a criminal problem. Yeah. He would be in the middle of the streets accosting cars and things like this. And and they finally put him in jail. And then, of course, the jail people abused him and allowed him to die.
And listen.
Terrible, terrible situation. So it is a problem. It is a problem. And it's funny because in thinking they're doing right, because there was abuse in mental institutions.
Oh, sure.
But instead of fixing them like we're fixing the VA.
Yeah.
Okay. Instead of fixing the mental institutions, and I think you would agree, there really should be state-run mental institutions, mental hospitals.
There is a fraction, about 10% of what there used to be.
Right. There should be more.
Oh, yeah. Listen, there's a lot of people that have tried every medicine. They've become wards of the state, and the state has turned them into guinea pigs and has destroyed their brains even further in their desperation to find some magic pill that fixes their mental illness. And it doesn't. There are some people just waiting for a miracle. That was the case down there in McAllister when the county sheriff pulled me aside. I said, no, Jeff is one of those boys still waiting for his miracle.
Yeah. The problem is, though, the people who, before they get there to that point,
mm-hmm.
people don't have the funds to go to Laureate or some of these other,
the
private, the expensive ones that mm-hmm. you see, Betty Ford Clinic or this clinic, that clinic. Mm-hmm. You've got drug issues that eventually rot the brain, that people get to that point, and other issues that cause them to end up that might be helped by private mental institutions, and then they become criminally insane, and then, of course, they end up mm-hmm. in jails. And those people don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's a, but anyway, we need to move on.
Yeah.
But this was a good segment. Hey, I wanted to bring up a couple of issues here. One was Vladimir, our friend Vladimir. Did you see where he did, he had a Make Russia Great Again rally?
Oh, yeah. Real glitzy.
Yeah, it was a
celebrities in the stadium.
Yeah, yeah, it was not, it was literally a Make Russia Great Again rally. Yeah. You know, he really, Trump didn't make an impression on America. Okay, he did in conservative circles in America, certain people. But around the world, world leaders literally still hate the man. France, Germany, the people who should really be taking notes from him, they hated him because he replaced them. Do you remember who used to be the leader of the free world during Obama's reign? It was Angela Merkel.
Yeah,
Angela Merkel, who's ridiculous. She was, she's who really has us in problems right now.
Yes, she does.
Because Germany just went, you know, and but they called her the new leader of the free world, Angela Merkel. It wasn't Obama. Obama had to bow to Angela, okay? So Angela was the leader of free world, and Putin and them, they just laughed at that. And so Angela hated Trump. In fact, I love that photo. Do you remember? Have you seen that photo?
Oh, Trump sitting there and Angela leaning over her
and
desk.
Trump's like this.
Yeah. And she's Angela, leaning she's down.
And, and Macron and all these.
She's fit to be tied. Yeah, and, she's. Yeah,
you know, I want to get that blown up and hang it on my wall. Just a, okay.
I'll find that.
Yeah, it's a great photo. But anyway, and the new guy, I don't know, you don't hardly hear anything from him.
No.
So, and we know Biden's not the.
Oh,
and,
God.
And people used to say, oh, Angela Merkel, she's. And the reason they love Obama, I call him Obama. The reason they loved Obama and Bite Me, Joe, the reason they love these guys is because they could feel good about themselves again.
Mm-hmm.
America wasn't the great America anymore.
Yeah.
It made them feel good about themselves. They hated America under Bush, under Reagan.
Sure.
Because it showed America's greatness.
Yes.
Our leaders showed their greatness, and these people did not. So... the Europeans, so-called NATO, were able to feel good about themselves. When Trump was in, they didn't feel so good about themselves anymore because he showed them for what they were. They were derelict in their duties. They weren't paying their NATO fees. They weren't doing anything. They just let America do whatever they want. And Trump started taking things from them.
Sure.
He said, oh, okay, you want to do that? So we're not going to pay our NATO fees. We're not going to protect you. We're going to move our military bases. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, you don't want to do your fair share? We're not going to do our unfair share because we were doing too much. So now with Biden back in, they want to start feeling good about themselves, but Russia's not allowing them. Putin came in and said, oh, yeah, you want to play it that way? We will. But here's the crazy thing. Do you know who now is the new leader of the free world?
Hmm.
The supposedly free world? It's Zelensky.
Mm.
Yeah, they call him, basically, he's the new leader. I mean, these people are nuts. These people are nuts. Did you see his speech the other day?
No. What?
Yeah, Thursday, he spoke to the joint.
Oh, yeah, by video. In the theater.
In the theater. Oh, was it Wednesday or Thursday?
I think it was Thursday.
Was it Thursday? Okay, either Wednesday or Thursday this week. Mm-hmm. So he spoke to the joint Congress, okay, House and Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe these people fawning over it. And then even everybody on Fox and Newsmax even, I just can't believe it. It was a stunning speech. It was blah, 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 blah. I wanted to gag.
Mm.
It was so contrived.
Mm-hmm.
He was just, I mean, in the video, I mean, I'm thinking, are you serious?
Mm.
I mean, you know, he's showing buildings being bombed and this and shot and shot. It was like a DNC production or something, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. Why are you? And then, of course, you've got Nancy. Mm-hmm. Getting up and saying in Ukrainian, the translation, glory to Ukraine, glory to Slava Ukraina, Slava Ukraina, and with her, you know, and I'm, oh my goodness, and then Zelensky makes his little speech, and remember this, he's an actor, people, he's an actor. When Ronald Reagan got up and made a good speech, they said, well, he's an actor, he's an actor. This guy gets up, he was a comedian, comedic actor. He wasn't even that good a one. But all of a sudden, oh, it's the most wonderful. Now, get this. He's in a war. He's in a war. And he won't give up. He didn't want to have peace talks. He doesn't want to give in.
Right.
Yet, they want to nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, how do you nominate somebody for the Nobel Peace Prize who's not ready to make peace? I mean, that doesn't make sense. It should be somebody from the outside that comes in and makes the peace, right?
You would think so. Isn't that
what you would think?
I would think so. But, you know, for any leader of a country to protect the liberty and autonomy of his own nation, you can't criticize that. It may not mean...
For a peace prize?
No, you have to separate out here. He may not be playing the role of a peacemaker, but he's a defender of his own people.
Okay, that may be one thing. But let's separate issues.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying nominate him for bravery or this.
Yeah.
Or this.
No, the Nobel Prize has lost all credibility.
Peace Prize. Yeah.
Yeah. They've lost all credibility.
Right. Okay.
When they gave Obama the Peace Prize before he even got in office.
Right. Yeah. They should have given him the Peace of Something Prize. But I'm still not convinced on Zelensky. I'll tell you what's happened to me. Okay, it's like I'm reverting back to the '60s, Eddie Huff. My name used to be C.B. Edwards.
Is that right?
Yeah, cold blooded Edwards III. Okay, that was my radical days. And it's crazy, but I am going back to my anti-government days.
Yeah.
My radical...
Your idealism.
Yeah. My anti-government days.
Thank you.
I just don't trust. I don't trust these people.
Yeah.
You know, I was against Vietnam. I'm against Ukraine.
Yeah.
Not the people of Ukraine. My heart bled for the people of Vietnam. They were getting killed and blown away and this, and I was thinking, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way than this.
Yeah.
And as we talked about last week, I want there to be peace in Ukraine. I don't want these little children being blown away and killed. Surely the people... we look at Russia, okay? You look at Belarus. You look at any country under Russia right now. I don't see those people suffering, do you? I mean, do you think they're suffering?
I don't think so.
You don't...
No, I don't think they're suffering at all.
No.
So if it's Ukraine, not because of oppression from, you know, yeah.
Right. So, to me, to become a part of Russia is not exactly the worst thing that could happen to the people. If you do it freely, or it can be negotiated that we still live somewhat autonomously, right? Look, if California can be part of the United States, but not be a part of the United States, as it apparently is right now anyway, that's not so bad, right? Because California is definitely out there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They have their own set of rules anyway.
They have their own gas prices.
That's kind of how I would see it. That's kind of how I see things.
Yeah.
So to me, the worst thing in the world is not for Ukraine to not be. It'll still be the Ukraine. I mean, that's what it was. You remember, it used to be the Ukrainian. What's her name? The skater. They have her on there.
Oksana Bayul.
Oksana Bayul. Yeah. And so she was from Ukraine.
Yeah.
So and so is from Belarus.
Yeah.
The Belarusian. Belladonna or whatever, you know, all these, they were always from wherever they were from. It was like a state of such and such, okay? So they had their own identity. So to me, to live to fight another day is better than to be dead and not fight at all and end up in the same place.
I want to say something on that, Eddie. When my middle son, spent a summer in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He was with YWAM, which you were a part of.
Right.
And so I'm trying to find out more about where this place is. And he's just like maybe a two-hour drive from Chechnya. So I know he's going to be in a little bit of a scary place. But you know what's the coolest thing? Is pull up Google Street View anywhere in the world. Because it'll dispel a lot of the myths that you had about how people live. And I was pulling up the city in Nalchik, where my son was going to be. I'm like, man, that looks like middle America. You know, and you look at the cars, Eddie. And a lot of the cars in these places are nicer than the cars in Tulsa. You know? And you look at the standard of living. Now, I know back when Nixon first went to Beijing, you know, and big deal. And they made China look really nice for him, but you get outside of where all the, you know, photo shots are and you find out people living in huts. Well, it isn't that way in China anymore. But so this is the kind of thing. You really want to know what things are like in the world. Ukraine is doing fine. Do you know they're one of the most prosperous agricultural nations in the world?
Oh, I know. Like, I was thinking about, you know, we talk about the refugees, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I look, I was telling my wife, when I see these people fleeing Ukraine into Poland, into Hungary, into Czechoslovakia and all these places, or the Czech Republic or Slovakia, I look at their clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed one scene where they were in like a train terminal.
Right.
Every last one of them has a cell phone.
Oh, yes.
They're all sitting there on their phones.
Yes.
They're all texting. They're all doing this. They all have these nice thermal jackets on with stocking caps.
And this isn't Fiddler on the Roof.
No, we're not talking India. We're not talking Nigerian refugees.
Yeah.
I think of East Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm thinking, you know, people, I'm sorry, but in some ways I have to agree with Joyless Reed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joy Reed, I have a lot of issues with her, and she's not a friend of mine. Let's put it that way. I'm no fan of Joy Reed. But in some ways, I think she's right. Would we be as upset about, let's say, Ethiopians, Congolese? For example, when the... do you remember when the Rwandans were being
killed? Oh, yeah, that slaughter.
We lost a million, over a million people were just slaughtered and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Did Bill Clinton send anybody in there to stop that?
No.
No, nobody stopped that. Nobody nobody cared.
We didn't hear
came
about
in from
it
the
for
Congo.
A week.
Yeah, nobody, you know, if you send him to the Central African Republic, you know, CAR, nobody's going to care. Nobody
that truly was a genocide.
Oh, truly a genocide, you know. And so far, as I've heard, more Russians have been killed in this conflict than Ukrainians. But yet, it's this dire thing. Why is it such a big deal when you got probably more people die in India every day than are dying in Ukraine, or, you know, more people are dying in Africa every day from different things? Now, you can make it what you want. If you want to diss me, get down on me because, oh, you have no heart. No. Do what you want to do, okay, because you're misinterpreting what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, why are we so upset about Ukraine? Why are we so bent on sending armaments, airplanes, you name it, to Ukraine when there are other issues that are so important and people dying all over the world that we could and should maybe be helping?
Yeah.
Right? What's the Boko Haram in Nigeria?
Mm-hmm.
Stealing little children, burning little boys.
Yeah.
Burning little boys. Are we sending troops in? I mean, we could send in the 1st Armored Division. We could send in the not just the SEAL Team 6, send all the SEAL teams in and just wipe out Boko Haram, right?
Yep.
We could do that, but we don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet for some reason we want to send and get involved in a shooting war with Russia.
Yep.
See, these are things, see, I'm very conservative, okay, as you know, okay? But at the same time, I want to be real, people. I want to be real. Why are we ready to get in a war that may start World War III in Ukraine, but we're hesitant. We don't want to throw our considerable weight into there. Venezuela, we could easily go down and use the Monroe Doctrine to get rid of the leader of Venezuela.
Yeah.
I mean, we could easily do that.
Trump could have easily.
Trump could have anybody. You know, Biden could do it now. Even before Trump, Obama could have done it.
Yeah.
But we're not going
to
do
it. No, I think these wars are a diversion. I think it was intended to be a diversion.
I'll tell you what else it is.
Yeah.
That industrial military complex.
Industrial
complex, because it's more money.
Oh, huge money.
We can make more armaments. We can ship them there. Sure. Let's send them that. We can do back stock. We'll make more, you know, General Dynamics, all of those armament carrier manufacturers can make more, send them. So we got to keep it going. So anyway, that's all out of that. Biden calls Putin a war criminal. You saw that?
Yes, I did.
That was so silly. He's at some event, and a girl asks him, President Biden, is President Putin a war criminal? No. Then he goes, walks off.
Yeah.
And somebody says, hey, that was a bad answer. You better go change that.
So he runs over.
And then he comes back. What was that you asked me? Was he a war criminal? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, it's ridiculous. So anyway, Russia responded to President Biden calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal by insulting him for his irritability, fatigue, and forgetfulness.
Yeah.
Top Russian presidential spokesman.
This is not Babylon B, is it?
No, this is not Babylon B. Yeah.
This is reality.
Yeah. The spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, said Russia sees and hears the statements Biden made and considers them a personal insult to Putin, but he won't take it seriously, according to TASS. Bearing in mind Mr. Biden's irritability, fatigue, and forgetfulness, which eventually results in aggressive statements, we will possibly prefer to refrain from making any strong comments so as not to trigger more aggression.
Ooh, that's a dig.
Yeah. It said Biden called Putin a war criminal Wednesday for invading Ukraine in response to Fox White House correspondent Jackie Heinrich's question. Yep. He then said Putin was a murderous dictator, a pure thug who is waging an immoral war, while speaking at the Friends of Ireland luncheon on St. Patrick's Day Thursday.
Yep.
And so he said, I would say that it's not in our interest for Iran to acquire nuclear weapons, and Russia is a member of P5-1, was what Jennifer Psaki said. She responded, so that is the pursuit of a deal that is our interest. So they were questioning her later on about, why are we still working if Biden's calling him all of that? Why is he doing that? It's crazy what's going on up there. I don't think they really know what they want to do and what to do with this situation. They're trying to walk that thin line between love and hate. they don't know what to do. They're being pressured on one side by one group. What I find interesting, too, though, is you have the Democrats who are so ready to get us into this.
Yeah.
And the Republicans who are the ones who are trying to join them so quickly. But you have people... Your more conservative Republicans are trying to say, don't do this, don't do this. Have you noticed that Tucker Carlson, a lot of your really conservative people are becoming public enemy number one for their stance? It's an anti-war stance is really what it is. The new anti-war group has become more conservative group.
Always kind of has. I mean, take Pat Buchanan was always, considered an isolationist, and a lot of libertarians, Ron Paul, Now, that's not to say all libertarians. Barry Goldwater was a war hawk.
Yeah, Rand too.
Yeah.
Rand as well.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. If you believe in liberty, if you believe in self-determination, quit trying to impose our values on the rest of the world.
Yeah, and here's my big thing, Dave, and I shared this. You probably saw it on my Facebook page. Where are Germany, France, Holland, Belgium, you name England? Mm-hmm. Let them do. They're closer to them.
Yeah, it's true.
Let them stand
That's
out.
That's true.
Once they move, once they do their thing, yep. then we will join them, right?
And it's a wrap.
Yeah, I hate. I'm just getting going.
I know, too.
I'm just getting going. I may do my own thing when I get home. I may just I'll do an hour of my own at the hypocrisy I see.
Yeah.
But no. Hey, thank you, everybody. It's been good to be with you. David, thank
it's
you.
Good.
And we'll see everybody next week.